and welcome to Too Many RPGs, a show about RPG shows. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ethan. This is a show where we talk to creators and fans of actual play podcasts and streams about why they enjoy them. Hey, Lauren, I'm going to ask a non-topic question.
Oh, okay.
What's your favorite animal?
Zebras.
Really?
Yeah.
I would not have guessed that.
Oh, really?
I don't think I've ever heard you talk about zebras before.
I love them very much. I don't remember why or how they became my favorite animal, but I remember going on a trip to the zoo with my dad and really wanting to see the zebras and getting there and seeing them and being like so excited that I saw the zebras. And it was in that moment. It's like, you know, when you realize you're in love, I was like, oh my God, zebras are my favorite animal.
Just like solidified in that moment.
Yeah. And it's actually like, not my art is up yet, but like in my previous apartments I had like a zebra corner of all kind of like zebra art.
I would not have ever guessed that. Like, that's not usually on the list of things that are people's favorite animals.
They are beautiful and majestic, and they bite you if you try and touch them.
I mean, yeah, they're basically like super special ponies.
Yeah, they're fancy ponies. Yeah, I don't know. I just really like them. They're real good. They run fast. They look cool. Their babies are real cute. They just make me really happy. What's your favorite animal?
Mine's much simpler. I just like bears.
that does not surprise me. In fact, I probably should have realized that.
They, you know, like they're big, scary animals, but they're not strictly carnivores. And they're smart enough to figure out how to do heists, like in real life. Like, have you ever seen those videos of bears pulling out people's car windows?
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly, without breaking them, just pulling them out.
Mm-hmm.
Getting inside, stealing what's up in the ice chest, and then leave.
Yeah, bears are great.
They're super smart and strong, and they love honey.
They do.
It's what I aspire to be.
In aggressively Canadian stories, my dad once, I don't think he was at the party, but he had a friend who was at the party, that a bear walked in and everybody was too drunk to realize.
Hey, come on!
Like, they tried to take his coat off because it was like winter, right? And so... Or like, it was not winter, but it was like,
yeah, it was cold.
Getting cold, right? So they tried to take his coat off, and he just kind of, the bear was like, rah! They're like, oh, sorry, bear.
Oh, sorry, bear. You're not a coat.
It took them like a really long time to realize that it was not a person, but a bear.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, this has now become a bear podcast.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be one of many themes going into this podcast.
Bears?
No, just this being a podcast about things that are not the thing that the podcast is about.
It's true. Who do we have here this week?
This week we have Aaron talking about that D&D podcast, which doesn't just do D&D.
Nope. Does a whole bunch of other stuff, including D&D sometimes.
Sometimes. Hello, Aaron.
Hey, Aaron. How are you doing?
Hello. It's really warm down here, so I'm trying to survive the sauna that is Louisiana.
Oh dear.
Yeah. It's not even summer yet, and it's been like 95 the past couple days, so it's going to be great. Yeah, yeah.
That's normally us in the desert, but we've actually been having like rainstorms.
Mm. Yeah, I think recently we just set our own record, like we beat our own record for the most days that the Mississippi River was above like the critical flood stage. So, yeah, it's real good.
I only just put away my winter coat.
I feel like we're on different planets almost. It's kind of ridiculous.
I mean, not like, okay, my winter coat's been gone for a while, but like my post-winter, pre-real spring coat.
I own one coat.
I own one coat I get to wear for like 17 minutes a year. I don't understand.
I have several coats.
Welcome to Too Many Coats.
Too Many Coats, the podcast. It's true. I have a heavy duty wool coat for windy days, and I have a regular winter coat, and I have a mid-fall early winter coat.
Like, I understand, because I have seen those pictures that you posted of like the trees that end up having ice surrounding them because it's both wet and freezing.
Yeah.
And then you get like popsicle trees.
Yeah.
Delicious popsicle trees.
They're very pretty.
They taste like pain.
They're very pretty, but very scary.
Yeah, I could see that.
At least I don't live in the house that has the death icicles over my door anymore.
What?
So it's a new trap.
Yeah.
This is like the new Home Alone movie happening here?
Yeah, there was just the way the overhang for my door worked. There were just these 3 to 4 inch thick icicles.
Oh, of course. It's great.
Just hanging out when I'd open the door in the morning. Hello, here's some death. Have a broomstick.
You ever talk about the place where you live with other people and then everyone is collectively surprised that everyone managed to make it to adulthood, like, alive?
Yes.
Okay, good, because I'm having that right now.
It's okay. You're talking about, like, you know, when you talk about the weather, the temperatures down there, I would just melt.
Yeah, I mean, I go play during, like, I play outside in hurricanes and stuff because I apparently have a reckless disregard for my own well-being. So, you know, it's...
Acclimation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
I used to live in the path of a hurricane, and every so often there'd be like, oh, there's a hurricane coming, but it's not that, it's not a big one, it's not that bad.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's only category 4, whatever, I'm staying at home.
And that's us and earthquakes.
Yeah.
Everyone freaks out about earthquakes, but it's just like, oh no, our house shook a little bit.
Yeah, but it's not supposed to, is the thing.
I mean, it does that all the time here.
No thanks. No thanks. I'm gonna take my hellscape.
I feel like this is the normal conversation. Like, this is how normal human beings talk. And it's the same exact kind of conversation that people who play role-playing games have when they're talking about different editions of the same game. Like, talking 3rd versus 4th versus 5th D&D.
It's like, okay, so I have to plan these feats this far ahead of time, and they're just like, oh, you poor child. Okay, great. No, feats? I only have 2 of them. I'm a humanoid, only got 2 feats. What are you talking about?
Yeah. That was an excellent segue into so that D&D podcast.
I got one.
Is you've played in many systems.
Oh geez, yeah. Do you want me to list them? I could try.
Let me pull up the website. Let's see if we can catch them all.
How did that let's talk about the origin stories of that D&D podcast. What system did it start in? Obviously D&D, I'm assuming.
Yes. But so we started off in 4th edition. The podcast as a whole was my way of sort of confronting my extreme fear of performing in front of people. So basically all the original cast and I were all members of the same message board online for the Penny Arcade forums. Webcomic about, you know, video games and general nerd crap. So at one point I came to everybody and I said, hey, I'm going to try and do a podcast. Does anybody want to play? And then like 4 or 5 people were eventually like, yeah, let's do that. And I'd never really DM'd before. And then that was the first thing I DM'd and we recorded it. And it was actually it went better than I thought it would. It wasn't a screaming trash fire the whole time.
I'm looking at the systems that you played.
Yes.
You've played 4th edition.
Yes.
I've not actually heard of anyone doing a 4th edition podcast.
Really?
And I'm curious. Because I love 4th edition. I kind of like matured in 4th edition.
That was the first one that I had played. So that's, mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of, I've noticed it's the same with Mario Kart games. Your first one is the one that you always have that fondness for. That was the first one I played, and there's parts of it that I really like, and then after moving on to other systems, I feel like there's parts of it that don't flow as well as I would want for, like, a long-term podcast, I guess. Mm-hmm. I felt like the combat took a little bit too long, and we had times where entire episodes were combat.
You have your finale for that season, or that game. You have a finale combat. And then finale story.
Yes. And the
finale. That's 2 separate podcasts.
The combat finale was I made my own army versus army system.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Basically, they woke up a god and decided they were going to kill it. So they made deals with other gods and, like, recruited armies. So I was like, okay, so each person has to pick an army they're in charge of. And each army is going to have different stats. And depending on how many people are still left alive in the army, you're going to be able to do this much damage. And, like, it was like a 10-page Word document of It worked, I guess. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I mean, I still kind of don't, but I just wing it when I'm making games and stuff now.
If people are having fun.
Yeah, that's the important part.
I feel like in tabletop as a thing, nobody really knows what they're doing.
It's all pretend. It's like being an adult. Nobody.
And if somebody says they know what they're doing,
don't trust them.
Yeah, like they're either lying or like that's not true. They think they know what they're doing, but they don't.
So they're either lying or delusional.
Basically, yes.
Yes, but so you started in fourth edition, mm-hmm. and then have moved on to a whole bunch of other systems. Are you telling like kind of one overarching story, and then you have kind of side adventures and other systems in like a Friends at the Table kind of way, or are you just like new story, new system every single time?
So I didn't mean to do this, but so when we did the fourth edition campaign, I kind of set it in somewhat of my own kind of world. I borrowed some gods from, you know, like the Player's Handbook and Dungeon Master's Guide and stuff, but the world was basically just some hodgepodge thing I made. And then after that, we transitioned over to Dungeon World. And at some point, like 10 episodes in, I realized, oh, hey, this is the same world as before, just like a couple thousand years later. So we just kind of ran with that. And then after that campaign, I tried doing a experiment. I called it a mega campaign because I didn't have any idea what else to call it. But it was sort of we did Dungeon World, and we got like listeners of the podcast and just random people online to come join. And before every session, I would basically do a roll call and see who was available and just pull like four or five random people for everything. And they would all be parts of like the same adventuring company. And right before the end of that, I realized, oh, wait, this thing that I've been leading up to can be this god from that first campaign. So I did. And apparently I'm somehow predisposed to continuing storylines without realizing it.
That's kind of fun how it like naturally happens that way, because I feel like it takes a lot of the pressure off of like being like, I need to tell this great arc and have it planned from the beginning. And you can be like,
yeah, absolutely. It makes life so much easier.
So I want to know, I'm pretty sure it's not, but in my heart of hearts, I hope this. I noticed that one of your game's titles is Space Wizards, mm-hmm. and the other is Blades in Gastown.
Yes.
I want those to be together in the same universe.
Unfortunately, those were, so started off with just me DMing, and then as we decided to spin off and do more stuff, we have a few other people on the podcast who DM also, just so nobody has to shoulder, you know, the burden alone, because DMing and never being able to play is kind of a bummer sometimes. So Space Wizards was run by Mike, and it is a Star Wars one, and Blades in Gastown is Blades in the Dark, but set in an approximation of Vancouver, where one of the cast members, Andrew, lives, and that's one that he DM'd.
Okay. Does that one have like sort of a Mad Max sort of vibe?
No, I think one of the like nicknames for Vancouver's Gastown or something. I have no idea. I just went with it.
I think so. I think that might be true. I don't know. There's so many nicknames for so many Canadian cities that don't make sense.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely fair.
Oh, okay. Gastown is a particular neighborhood in Vancouver.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. I think that's accurate. In Toronto, there's a part of the city called Cabbage Town.
Delicious.
So
we can't stop here. This is Cabbage Town. But I'm sort of blown away sometimes by the stuff that we get to do. Because I want to say last year, right after, it was a little while after I came out as trans, I started looking around to see if we can interview some people in the tabletop space. Mostly like queer game devs who are doing, you know, more like indie games, because I wanted to help highlight stuff that not everybody knows about. And we got to interview a bunch of people, and through that, we got to play games with some of them. So like we got to play Blades in the Dark with John Harper, the guy who made Blades in the Dark, and you know, stuff like that. And it's been really cool to do stuff where I was like, this is never going to happen. This is not a thing that'll ever happen. And then it did.
Yeah, that's your improbable interview.
Yes, because from the beginning, I was like, this is not a thing that anyone will ever respond to. And then like 90-something% of the people I talked to said yes. And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, there's some like pretty exciting and big names on this list.
Yeah, we got Adam Coble, we got Austin Walker, we got John Harper. Through doing that, I actually met like two of my partners. So like Ash and Jason, I got to kind of awkwardly flirt with them as I tried to schedule an interview. And so, you know, interviews can lead to lots of stuff.
You found love through podcasting.
Yes, strangely enough.
I mean, hey, that's like, it's a good way to find love.
Yeah, you know, you have shared interests, right? That's something.
Yeah, what is... I'm looking at your episodes right now. It's called Swamp Wizards. Is Swamp Wizards related to Space Wizards?
Not even a little.
Okay.
I love all these names. They're so good.
Swamp Wizards is another game that Mike ran using the Dresden Files stuff. And it's... You... Eventually they find out, like all the bad... The main bad guys in that are like Disney themed, and like the big bad evil guy is some like necromancer version of Mickey Mouse.
Okay.
So like backwards Kingdom Hearts.
Almost, yeah. Like one of the player characters is basically the living embodiment of those Florida Man articles you see on, you know, the news where somebody just does something awful. Stuff like that.
So I'm assuming it takes place in Florida.
Somewhere thereabouts, it kind of roams a little bit.
This isn't just a swamp. This is every swamp.
If there's a swamp, there might be a wizard there that needs killing.
So, yeah, I guess how many DMs are there on your show?
There's me, there's Mike, Andrew. Zach ran a few things. He ran a sort of Russian-themed Blades in the Dark thing.
Okay.
Is that the Blades in Concordant?
Yes, that is that one. I got to be an evil lawyer who was also a demon. It was real good.
Nice.
You could do weird stuff in Blades. It's fantastic.
I guess that's an important question. Who is the, like, it seems like on your website there's quite a few people who play every so often, but do you have like a core gang of this is that D&D podcast?
We do. It's shifted a little bit. It's mostly the original crew that we started the fourth edition campaign with. So it's me, my sister-in-law Renee, Mike and Andrew. Zach has kind of come in to do a lot more stuff recently. My brother was one of the main cast people, but he's sort of stopped playing due to, you know, life busyness. So it kind of changes a little bit over time, but for the most part, those are like people you'll see most of in each campaign.
Right now, it's if people are jumping in to listen to it right now, and you have a huge backlog, obviously, since you've been playing since 4th edition.
We just made 5 years on the 19th.
Mm, congratulations.
Thanks.
So right now you're running Swamp Wizards. It's Dresden Files. Is that like Fate, I think?
That was unfortunately one of the ones that I didn't play in due to some scheduling conflicts. The things that they talk about after those sessions, you just kind of have to, you know, put your head in your hand and just, okay, I need to listen and see how horribly this goes. We need to figure this out.
Do you run kind of like one campaign arc game at a time, or are you releasing other systems and story arcs at the same time?
It really depends on how many people we can muster and how busy life is for everybody. There was a point where we had 4 campaigns we were trying to run at the same time, but that leads to people getting burned out really quickly. So lately we've been trying to do one or maybe two. Like we'll do sessions on Tuesdays and Thursdays if we have, you know, 2 campaigns running, but we were finding that we were putting way, way too much time into it to the point where like we were, you know, spending most of our weeknights doing this. And I was like, well, you know, we've got spouses and kids and stuff, so this is probably not the best idea.
Wait, you mean there's life outside of making podcasts?
Look, I'm just as surprised as you are, okay?
Ethan, did you know this?
Wait, there's a door here.
What?
Don't.
What?
Don't,
what's outside
it's
this
a trap,
door?
It's a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap.
I'll check it for traps real quick.
Okay, great.
I'm going to check for traps. I got a 10, so I think we're okay.
Okay.
It does not appear to be trapped.
Oh, there's like a whole world out here.
Oh.
How are the graphics?
Is that... I think that's fresh air. Mm. Interesting. Okay. Mm. So this goes outside.
Sounds fake. I don't trust
that.
That sounds real fake.
Did you guys know there's a sky out here?
That's fake too.
Yeah, no. That's not real.
You're trusting way too many things right now.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's not great.
I've rolled really low on my insight, so.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, I guess, what is... You've been playing for 5 years. Do you have like a favorite system or story that you've told, a personal favorite?
So I have a fun DMing story, and then I guess I'll go into some system stuff. So the first episode that we ran together, like fourth edition, I was always told that you have to plan everything out and you have to have like a binder of events and NPCs. So I had just a ridiculous amount of stuff prepared and ready to go. And then the first episode, they were supposed to have an encounter with like, you know, the main villain, and he was supposed to get away on the back of some eagle or something. And one of the guys was like, oh, hey, but I have this bow and arrow that I found. I'm going to try to shoot him. And I was like, that's fine, I guess. What? You'll never hit him. And then he got a critical, and then the guy fell out of the sky. And, you know, episode one, the big bad evil guy is dead. And I had to just throw that entire thing out. And it was, it was great.
Oh, gosh.
From then, I realized that doing a slightly more improvisational approach would probably work better.
That's actually a very good lesson to learn your first day.
Yeah, it was a whole thing.
It's better than learning it, you know, 20 hours later.
Yeah, and I feel like that really helped set the tone for things, because, I mean, I could have very well just said, no, he's too high, you can't do that, and then just rolled with it. But I've always tried to make sure that people know that, you know, your idea is valid. Try the thing. What's the worst that could happen? I'll just throw this binder away. Don't worry about me. I'll be over here crying. But it helped a lot with figuring out the way I wanted to run things. And I feel like that really paid off when we did the mega campaign thing, because mostly I would throw up some jobs on this job board. So once we had a crew for that episode figured out, they would pick a job they wanted to pursue, and we would just kind of wing it from there. They had a few times where I couldn't make an episode, so Andrew stepped in for me, and he decided to plan some... It was almost like a murder mystery in this fancy person's house. And he was like, don't worry, I've got this ready and set up for you. And I was like, okay. And then he sent me a document, and it said, the butler did it, stretch this out into 3 hours. And... I was so pissed at him at the time, but I did it. We figured it out, and I feel like it worked great, mostly because the party members were like, I couldn't have done it because these reasons. The person who did this would have been the person who's guilty. And without knowing it, they were like directly implicating other members of the party the entire time. And it made my heart very happy to see them panicking because they were screwing themselves over and each other. But it's been a lot of fun.
I think Ethan and I have both GM'd mysteries for each other and then later revealed that we had no plan, and we let the party solve the mystery, and then we're like, yes, you figured it out. You're so smart.
Great job, y'all. That was obviously what it was.
How I run mysteries is I set up a problem with no solution. I have one possible solution that I'm like, okay, if they've completely been stumped, this is how I would solve this.
Yeah.
Which is never what the party's going to do.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not even close.
That is also how I run mysteries.
So you just let them run with things, and then you're like, okay, I can see how you got there. That makes sense. So that's the truth.
I'll give you this one, sure.
Just throw some random things in there. Could this be a clue? It is now.
Is this a clue?
Pigeon guy. That sounds real great. So I love this. The mega campaign sounds like it was a West Marches kind of thing, but honestly, mega campaign is a better title, I think. So,
I mean, you can put mega on the front of anything, and it's supposed to be better.
It's at least supposed to be bigger, right?
Yeah.
And bigger, I believe, I've always been told, is better. So, yes.
Typically, assuming it's a positive value.
Yes.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about the improbable interviews that you do.
Sure.
Because it's very cool.
That's very meta. Like, okay, so we're in this interview show. We'd like to talk to you about your interviews.
I would like to interview you about your interviews.
We have to go deeper.
Why start interview episodes in, you know, what was a just normal actual play podcast?
It was kind of to see if I could and how it would go. Because we had a few interviews before that where people would reach out to us and they were like, oh, hey, we've got this documentary coming out, or this book just came out. Do you want to talk to the author, or, you know, the person who's being documentary something. And it was those were fun, but it felt really kind of, I don't know, like corporate, because we were doing this because they were specifically, you know, coming to us to promote whatever thing they wanted to promote. Whereas, you know, there's some people who are sitting there working in the background forever and ever, not really getting a chance to talk about the things they like or what inspires them to make stuff. And those were the kind of things I wanted to highlight. So I started reaching out, and I think with all of those initial pitches, I was like, look, if you don't want to do it, that's completely fine. Sorry for wasting your time. But, you know, here's what we want to talk about. Your favorite moments, what inspires you, your process, what you hope to do in the future, just kind of anything and everything. And we would always make sure beforehand to be like, okay, is there anything you specifically want to talk about or don't, so that, you know, we can kind of tailor it to whatever they were comfortable with and wanted to kind of highlight. And I feel like it went well, and they flowed well, and it was a really good way to kind of make connections. So maybe down the road, you know, those would be something that we can use, like, hey, John, do you want to come play your game on our podcast? Cool, come hang out.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. How was playing Blades in the Dark with the person who wrote Blades in the Dark?
It was great. Our characters got demon blood tattoos together.
was John the GM, or was he just a player character?
Yeah, he was a player alongside us. So that was one of the things he was saying. He was like, I never get to play my own game. People always want me to run it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I told him. I was like, okay, well, we are going to figure out a way. If someone on our team is courageous enough to GM your own game to you, to get you to play it.
That's the biggest problem, honestly, because I've written a thing or two, and it's so hard to get other people to run it for you.
Yeah.
Because as on the creator side, I just want to see someone do the thing.
Exactly. And I kind of wanted to show that, you know, all these people are just people. They want to play the games too, and they want to do the cool thing. So that was one of the things we kind of also got to highlight. But I've played a few games with John since then. He's rad, and we just talk occasionally about, you know, whatever. But just, if you ever play Blades in the Dark with him, never let him be a whisper, because he should not have unfettered access to, like, dark magic. We were playtesting a campaign setting that Ash McCallan wrote for Blades. It was called City of Red Waters. It's basically set in like a fictionalized version of New Orleans. And John was playing a whisper, and he summoned some ancient god of, like, we're really mad about genocide and we're going to kill stuff, when he meant to summon something completely different. And some gallows came alive and chased us down a street, and it was a whole mess. And don't let John be in charge of summoning anything, is what I'm telling you tonight.
All right. I will keep that in
mind. I kind of want to see him in an Invisible Sun game now.
Yeah, because you can just summon whatever you want, all the demons forever.
Some casual demon summoning.
Yay, all the demons forever. The RPG.
You can like hold Pokemon demons inside of your body. Just all of the demons. They just live inside you now.
This sounds like a weird dating sim.
It's kind of turning into a weird dating sim.
It is 100%. We did not plan that, but
you never do, but it happens.
It always happens.
It does.
You just draw that devil card, and it's right in there in the text.
Yeah. It's like, oh, now you're dating. Sorry.
It wasn't even me this time. Usually I'm the one who's like, who turns games into dating sims, but no.
I do too. It's fine.
I don't know if you saw my tweet about how I categorized every single RPG romance I've ever done.
Oh God, I haven't seen that. I'm going to have to check that out later.
I just saw the number 39.
Holy crap, you got to 39?
I did.
I mean, that's fine. I'm not judging you.
It's not a race.
You got a game.
I just like, I just like love stories. They're just fun. So I try and tell them as much as I possibly can. Like 10 or 12 of them are games of StarCrossed.
Which is kind of the point.
Yeah, that's like the whole point. And you know, there were a couple, like, I played this romance game, so there was a romance. But there are a surprising amount of games that aren't romance. You can turn any game into a game about smooches.
Oh yeah. You just gotta try real hard. And sometimes you don't even have to try real hard.
No. Yeah. So, gosh, I'm trying to ask you questions about this podcast, but like, this podcast is so many things that it's very hard to be like, tell me about this podcast. But I actually kind of like that it's a whole lot of things because...
Yeah, I've talked to people at work about it and they were like, oh, so what's your podcast about? I was like, how much time you got? And then, you know, we just kind of start digging into whatever the hell, trying to explain this nightmare conglomeration of absolutely fantastic people.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I might have an answer.
Who among your extensive character list, could be PC, could be NPC, who was your favorite character in any of them? Because I just kind of want to get, like, the sense of... at least one character in your show, right? Because sometimes, a lot of times when you're coming in to listen to a D&D podcast, you care about the characters.
Absolutely. Let me see. I've got a couple. I think one of my favorites is a guy whose nickname was Ogre when we played Blades in the Dark. That was my character for the first like season or two of Blades in Gastown. And I originally designed him to be this kind of grumpy dude who just was generally tired of dealing with everybody, and he solved his problems by violence. But like over time he grew into this person who had like a moral code that he super believed in, and as long as you were within that you were fine, and then if you weren't, God help you, because by the end I learned how to punch the souls out of people.
Yeah, I was gonna say, Ethan, do we have to play Blades in the Dark
Ghost
now?
Punches?
Oh, have y'all never played Blades in the Dark?
I've never played Blades.
We gotta play Blades in the Dark. Anyway, so...
You had Ethan at punching the souls out of people.
So the great thing about Blades is every time you level up, you can either put it towards like a character advancement where you gain like a cool new ability, or you can put it towards certain like skill trees. There's like finesse and prowess and something else where you can put like an extra pip so you roll an extra die. And I always went with the ridiculous powers. So he had this power called Not to be Trifled With. And basically in combat, I was the equivalent of like a small gang of other people. And then there was some other thing I had where I can make my character take stress. And then he would be able to do a feat of borderline superhuman strength. So at one point towards the end, we're trying to steal an airship and we're going up to this fortress and the gates are closed. And I used my thing and I ripped this giant like 20-foot metal gate off the hinges and then beat the initial like wave of guards to death with it. And then we came in and stole the airship.
Yes.
One of my favorite moments in any D&D is I took the one that lets you use improvised weapons, and I beat someone up with a door.
Yes.
just I opened the door, ripped it off its, like, hit the guy with the, just opening it, ripped it off its hinges, just bashed him over the head. And I believe I ended up skating down a staircase with the door and like launching it at someone else.
I'm on board with this. This sounds great.
That is peak Ethan.
So I love, I don't know, like as much as Lauren loves smooching, I love silly fighting.
Oh, absolutely.
Which usually involves punches and or Jackie Chan shenanigans, like fighting with a door.
Jackie Chananigans, I believe it's shortened too.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But like, I feel like a lot of the characters I've played are just way different, because there's another one of my favorites is this little, she was a bard. What was her name? Ash. And her parents got killed, and like she got treated like crap trying to make a living out in the world. And that was the character I kind of used to explore like being a lady with. So, like, I made her right before I kind of came out as trans to everybody, and it was kind of one of those, like, she has no sense of, like, self-confidence, and she's worried everybody's judging her, and I think I basically just put me on a character sheet with a different name, and it was fun and really weird being just, like, an exposed nerve, I guess.
You know, we've heard a bunch of stories about people discovering, you know, their gender identity or their sexualities through role-playing games, and I think it's one of these, like, incredibly special things about role-playing games, mm-hmm. is that you can do that.
Absolutely.
In a way that, you know, sometimes you hear about that in, like, video gaming, you know, trans people playing, saying that, you know, getting to play their chosen getting to choose a gender in the game to be their actual gender or helped them figure out what their actual gender was. But when you're role-playing, there's like a whole other level, because all of a sudden, you know, that sexuality or that gender expression, or even just that like thing you didn't know about yourself,
yeah,
that you have discovered about yourself is so much more visceral when you're experiencing it.
Yeah, because I feel like it's because it's not, you know, choosing options from like a dialogue wheel sometimes or anything like that. If you're doing an RPG, a lot of times you are giving a direct voice to that character and you're trying to speak as them and you're trying to, you know, put yourself in their shoes and think how they would. And it's really easy to kind of use that as a vessel to explore stuff where you really wouldn't be able to otherwise.
Yeah, because you have complete control over your actions in a safe space. You know, because it's controlled. I've heard this from, you know, like school counselors and psychologists and people talking about using role-playing games in that situation to like help people with social interaction, because they can try things and it's in a controlled, safe place for them, where if something goes wrong, there aren't real life consequences to it.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Imagine if you could, because this always ends up being the case in D&D, like in real life, you could try to persuade someone, fail, and then just go straight into intimidation.
Oh, so you're not going to listen to me, huh? I guess it's murder time.
I mean, I feel like sometimes that does happen, and it's usually bad.
It's usually awful. Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. In fact, you shouldn't do it in D&D.
You shouldn't.
It's still just as bad.
Can we talk about how creepy the charm spell is?
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. We are anti-enchantment magic here.
Enchantment is... I know a lot of people think necromancy is the evil magic. No, it's enchantment.
Yeah. Look, with necromancy, you're just trying to raise a family, okay?
Yeah. Not your family, but...
Just a family, you know? It really just depends on which one's buried closest together. It's fine. Just let me.
We've actually talked about with other people how you can make ethically sourced necromancy by having like people sign contracts.
Yeah, like instead of being an organ donor, you could You could be like a vessel donor,
a bone donor.
Yeah,
bone donor sounds awfully close to something you can make awful riffs off of. I've been at too many tables.
Sometimes you just want a skeleton butler.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Bound forever to your service, but you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's fine.
And it doesn't feel, doesn't think.
As long as that skeleton's previous owner was willing.
Yeah.
I am fine with it.
You ended up, you know, you paid a small sum to their family after their death. Like it's ethically sourced, and you know, you bought those remains legally.
Free range organic butlers, no GMOs.
And you know what? They're not feeling it. That's not their soul in that skeleton.
No.
It's just their bones.
It's just magic. And they're not using it. And,
you
know, as somebody who works adjacent to funerals and actually works at a place that has a cemetery, like those cemeteries fill up quickly. And then what do you do with your remains? I think necromancy could be a very good way of putting pressure off families to pay for interments and cremations.
Absolutely. There was... It was really short-lived. I don't even know if we put out audio of it. There was one campaign I played where I tried to be an ethical necromancer, and basically before I used my raised dead, I would use speak with dead, and I would like talk to the person and be like, hey, so here's what I want to do. Is that cool with you? And then if they said no, I was like, all right, cool. Well, you know, have a good afterlife. Peace. Talk to you later, sort of thing. And I don't know if it was a little better. I didn't feel as guilty.
Consent-based necromancy.
Yeah.
There was something. I think it's in the Cypher rules. I'm going to double check it real quick, which kind of talks about the whole like charming individuals is kind of a bad rap.
It's gross. Don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it.
That's like, your PSA. Don't be gross.
You're literally ripping people's freedoms to do stuff.
Yeah, it's really awful. And I've actually seen it gone very, very bad in campaigns. It's caused like a lot of like, especially when it's used against player characters,
mm-hmm.
like player characters using it against player characters. It's
it's caused a lot of like real life drama.
Really, there should be a page in the book where like you try to cast it and then Clippy from Microsoft Office comes and he's like, it looks like you're trying to super violate consent. Are you sure?
The only enchantment magic that, off the top of my head, I haven't read the whole list, obviously, but the only enchantment magic that I'm like okay with is the friends cantrip, because all that does is give you advantage on...
And don't they get really upset after?
On persuasion. Yeah, they do get very upset, which... because they realize that you, like, use that magic. But all it does is, like, it just makes them more willing to listen to you when otherwise they shouldn't. Which I feel like...
That seems acceptable.
Yeah, it's like you're twisting the situation a little bit to get something, you know, to just get your words out, like to get your piece out, and then there's immediate negative consequences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But also potentially positive consequences, because potentially you also persuaded them and now they're just also angry at you for persuading them with magic.
Why couldn't you choose your sweet, sweet words and your logic like you always do?
But one of the things that I was going to say about, you know, the fact that you have so many different characters, mm-hmm. so many different campaigns, is that a lot of times when a podcast, when an actual play podcast especially, has been running for years and years, even if there's more than one campaign, the backlog is so much. And all of a sudden you say, like, oh, I really want to get into this podcast.
Good luck.
And they're like, well, there are 125 episodes. They're all 1 hour long. See you next year.
Yeah.
So it's really nice that your podcast doesn't have to be that. Like, nobody has to listen to all of your episodes.
No, and they that's the thing. It was when I kind of had the decision to make hints during the mega campaign that, oh, this is similar to, you know, this other world. There was two people who figured it out, and those were people who had listened to everything. But... like, everybody else was still able to enjoy the current campaign without, like, any of those, I guess, like, presuppositions or anything affecting the way that they ingested the, you know, the existing material.
Mm-hmm. It was not the Avengers Endgame of actual play podcasts.
No, I don't have that kind of cinematography budget.
I mean, you're a podcast, you don't have any cinematography budget.
I mean, they do stream sometimes.
Okay. We do, and we have a Patreon, but like that ain't putting nobody through college, let me tell you right now. We make enough money on the Patreon to pay my sister-in-law like once a year to do the audio editing.
Okay.
Back in the day, I used to do all of it, and that was when I had a job that would kind of allow for that to happen, and I don't anymore, so she's taken that upon herself, and it's been super appreciated, because I don't know how the crap we would still be around without her.
Moment of appreciation for all of the podcast editors out there.
Yes, it is a slog.
Yeah. Because
for a while we had, before we trimmed it down, like now it's just we do one GM and like four players, because we feel like that's a good balance to give everybody like time in the spotlight. Previously we were doing like six, so for a while it was seven audio tracks and then sound effects I would try to put in, and then any music I tried to put in, all in Audacity, trying to edit it so nobody was talking over anybody and everything flowed, and I wanted to pull all of my hair out forever.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's so great.
I'm just trying to remember back when I was doing, like, I tried to find sound clips of all the character intros.
Yeah, we used to do sound clips on this podcast.
And I...
yeah.
It's a whole thing. Like, you definitely start off with these, like, grand ambitions. And then afterwards, you're like, all right, I just want to make it to where, like, nobody is saying anything offensive. And then you can hear everybody's voice. And I'm going to call it a day.
I just want to make sure you can't hear all the strange mouth sounds that people make.
Oh, God, mouth noises. Why do people not... it's fine. It's fine.
Because some people really like those mouth noises.
I'm
not going to make any right now.
Please don't. Because you'll just have to edit them out later yourself.
Yeah, because I couldn't stand it, yeah.
I am going to open mouth slurp yogurt through a straw for the next four minutes. How are you?
Gosh. Oh my gosh. Yes. Another moment of... this has just become Podcast Editors Anonymous.
Yes, it has.
It's
this
all right.
Is a safe space.
Yeah, it is blessed work, and most people I know, yeah, like if that's all you can afford to do with your Patreon, that is money well spent.
Yeah, and it, you know, we spend it where we can to do that, or, you know, back somebody's Kickstarter and help out a little bit, fund a giveaway or something of, you know, something we did an interview for.
I finally found the passage in Numenera about charming magic.
Oh yeah. Ooh.
Do it.
Archai understand that changing a creature's mind against its will or otherwise compromising consent is not the way to build a following over time, because reputations are hard to shed once tainted by bad behavior.
Word.
Which the Archai is the, like, bard, I guess, of Numenera.
It's very interesting coming that came from Numenera, which is also a system that just, like, is like, here is a gate that just steals your organs.
Or here is a machine that
what?
Throws hooks at you, drags you into its mouth, and then turns you into packaged baloney.
I hate getting my organs stolen. Like, come on, guys.
And isn't it like 1d4 organs or something? Like, ridiculous.
Yeah, everything's very calculated in this game. It's...
Damn it, I've lost 1d4 organs again.
They're very hard to replace.
Roll on like the organ are. Table. Roll on the organ loss table to see which of them they are.
Oh no, my brain!
This is fantastic. I need to probably never play this, but it sounds fun.
I have a question about that D&D podcast.
Oh, okay.
What?
Yeah. Is the whole reason we're here.
I forgot.
Why are you still doing it? Like, what about this particular group of people, this particular, you know, or the podcasting process has you being like, yes, 5 years later, you're still really excited about it?
I still do it because at the end of the day, even if we're not playing a game, like, we could be just hanging out and chat for, you know, a few hours. These are people who we've been there for each other for, I mean, the last 5 years, but, you know, through people getting divorces and moving and rough times and great times, and, like, we make the time to plan out. Recently we've been working on this, but, like, we will rent a place at PAX and we'll all go and spend a weekend together, and that's, like, the first time we've ever actually been in the same place. But it's people that I trust and I value, and I know that we all work well together. Even if we don't have the same plan or the same idea for how something would run, like, everybody's approaching this with the best intentions, and that means a lot, especially when there are so many people who just kind of want to, you know, light the ant pile on fire and walk away.
So I think it's time for the final question, Ethan, and unless you have any other
questions. The penultimate question.
Oh, yes, the penultimate question, right. It's not the final question. we decided that last time. It's time for the penultimate question. Fill in the blank.
Oh, good. Yes.
If you like blank, you'll like that D&D podcast.
Jeez. If you like dice or really bad puns or awful innuendo or listening to friends hang out, or people telling engaging stories, you'll like that D&D podcast.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Aaron, for coming and sharing your stories with us. Where can we find you on the internet, and where can we find your podcast?
You can find us, if you look for that D&D podcast, it's a letter N and not an ampersand, on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Patreon, and Gmail. And if you go to thatdndpodcast.com, we have a repository of all of our episodes. The RSS feeds, if you subscribe to it online, only show the last 100, as opposed to however many we have. I haven't done the numbers because Squarespace is a jerk.
Fair.
All right.
All right. Yeah. Thank you so much.
This has been fun. Thanks
for been really great.
Letting me hang out.
I hope we get to play Blades in the Dark sometime so Ethan can punch the souls out of people.
Oh, there's... the thing Ash has been working on, there's, like, a new gang type, and it's called the River of Blood. And basically, it's like playing Blades in hard mode, because for every one of these people who are in, like, the main foundational structure of the government, you have, like a downside. So as long as the sheriff is alive, you get more heat after a score, and, you know, as long as the newspaper editor-in-chief is still alive, you don't get as much notoriety as you should. So, like, you basically form a small gang to take down the government. And I'm not saying it's, you know, really cathartic during recent political situations, but it is. And I recommend it. But yeah, thanks again. And y'all have a great night.
Thank you so much. Thank you to Aaron for talking with us, Jeff for the music, and you. Thanks for listening.
If you would like to be on the show or have a creator in mind that we should contact for future episodes, you can tweet us at Too Many RPGs, or you can contact Lauren at JL_NiceGirl.
Or Ethan at SuperRobotBear. If you liked this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher and recommend us to your friends. It really helps us spread the show to new people.
Too Many RPGs, Year 2, the second one.
Makes us sound like an anime.
Anime noise. I don't know what that would be.
Animes have lots of noises.
Shwing!
That is a noise that sometimes happens in anime.